for me, Milan is about being at my best every time I come to the start line. The uniqueness of the career that I've had these years where I've been ups and downs. What I'm really proud of is just that consistency over this long period of time of just constant improvement, growth. It's not always linear and upwards.
Welcome back to Hidden Champions. This is two-time U.S. Paralympian Danny Ehrvich, and I am bringing you this podcast alongside FIS. We are talking to the best athletes you've never heard of yet ahead of the Milano Cortina Paralympic Games so that when you tune in and you're cheering for the para snow sports, you have someone that you're now a fan of to be cheering on. Today, I am honored that this person would take time out of their busy schedule to talk to me, but he's forced to because we're friends. He is one of the best paranordic skiers, probably of all time, we could arguably say. He is a 12-time Paralympic medalist, a 26-time World Championship medalist, a 5-time Crystal Globe overall World Cup winner, hailing from the Great White North and skiing with one pole better than anyone else can. It is Mark Arends. Mark, welcome to the show. Do you like that intro? Was that sufficient to give your accolades?
Yeah, I think so.
You like that? Will you speak that to yourself now at every start line? Mark Arends, I'm a 26-time world champion and a 12-time Paralympic medalist. Do you self-talk at like the start line, or how do you get into the zone?
Oh yeah, well, for sure.
Okay, what type of stuff do you say to yourself?
Usually it's more the cues, kind of where I want to focus on, where do I, or just settling down, kind of like, okay, this is the moment, what's actually needed for me to focus on. So I'm just kind of talking myself in that, and also just like little snippets like, yeah, go have fun. Right, the work is kind of done.
You enjoy racing?
Yeah, there are days.
Crazy. Wow. This is supposed to be enjoyable. This is a sport and it's fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I could learn it. Something.
There's like a moment just before that's really fun. And then just before the end, most days is fun. Before the race ends. So
That's fair. So where are you right now? What are you doing? Knowing that the Milano Cortina Paralympics are very soon.
Very soon. Yes. So soon that I am just at home in Canmore. We're finishing up our last little staging here at our hometown, I guess, or home residences. And then the team actually leaves in a couple of days for Italy to go. First, we'll stop in Austria for a bit of a staging camp in Obertiliac. And then we're going to the big show.
And Team Canada recently named the cross-country ski team, a good mix, I'd say, of multi-time Paralympics medalists and some newcomers. So how do you feel about Team Canada as a whole coming into Milano Cortina?
I think that's really exciting. I like the mix. I think even just at the announcement, it was really fun to see as, you know, an old timer where I'm at this is my fifth games. And, you know, some of the just excitement and just eagerness of some of our rookies, like they're being named to their first teams. And I think that was really good to actually just take a step back and see it. It's, for me, it was almost like, oh, yeah, hear it. This again, you know, each games is different. Each announcement, Team Canada announcement is different. But it was fun to just kind of step back and be like, okay, be part of their moment, too. And their experience. So that was really neat. And I think there were going to be a few more of those experiences along the way. And I'm really excited to be part of that and kind of just sharing a few of the timbits. I think the first games, maybe I won't share everything because I think you have to actually live those moments. I don't remember a lot of my first games. I don't actually, like, I try to keep thinking about it, but there's a lot that I don't remember of it. I remember a lot more of Sochi, Pyeongchang, Beijing, those games, but Vancouver, I remember very little. And I think that was just because of how big the experience was. Now, it was at home, so there was a little bit of extra for myself, but it was my first games. I had just turned 20 days before the opening ceremonies. I think the rookies, the those going to their first games kind of just need to have that experience. Mm-hmm. And then we get to have some fun and talk about it afterwards.
I 100% agree, because we are in a similar boat from the US, like a good mix of returners and first timers. And I am so genuinely excited to watch them get to experience it all, everything from getting their team kits to seeing what the village is like. One of the athletes on our team, Michael Nealand, just got named from a bipartisan invite from FIS and IBU. And he just gets so excited over all these different experiences. Like the first time we all flew over together and we brought him into an airport lounge, he couldn't believe that all of the food in the lounge was free. And I'm like, just wait till the Paralympic Village and all the clothes you're going to get. Like, you are going to absolutely lose your mind. And it's going to be so fun to get to watch and witness. And I think that's, you know, it is such an invaluable part of the games. Like, obviously the games is about elite level sport and competing very highly, but it's also about all these other moments. It's about these moments of being together in the village, and just the games is a huge deal. And it's really fun to get to see that. Okay. So you were 20 years old in Vancouver, home Paralympic Games. How many years had you been skiing prior to qualifying for your first games?
So I was January of 2007. I got to say that right. was my first World Cup. I was skiing a little bit before that time. I was running with, I was competing in able body in a cadet program. So there was a lot of just learning what the sport was. I hadn't done that much time in the sport before that, and just had really cool opportunities. And it really quite literally snowballed into an opportunity to try para. I was looking up like, okay, I'm doing this sport with, I'm competing with able body. I know that there is a limit to that. Like at some point, these guys are going to be faster than I am. I was still doing quite well at the time. But this is also the most, you know, most popular winter sport in Europe. There's got to be other people with a disability that compete. And so following that train of thought, I finally found a connection with, at the time, Cross Country Canada, which is our NSO. And finally, they said, hey, why don't you come to this camp? So this was an introduction to parasport camp in Norway. That was my first international experience with para. Had a week-long training camp, and then we had, I think it was four races at the end of the camp at the Rinnerennet. And that was kind of, from those results, the national team were like, yeah, we like what we see, invited me to be part of the development team. I think that was in the summer of 2006.
Wow. And right after Torino.
So kind of named to the team.
Yep. Okay.
And after that, it was just like, let's see. I went to the trials here in Canmore and a little further west in Silver Star. And from those trials, the coach comes up to me in the middle of the stadium. He's like, can you miss school? I'm like, yeah, I can miss a little bit of school. Can you miss 3 weeks of school? I'm like, yeah, I guess so. Do you have a passport? And he's a Swiss guy, so he has a deeper voice. And I'm like, yeah, I have a passport. He's like, okay, good. You're coming to World Cup.
Wow.
And 3 weeks later, I was on my first World Cup.
Oh my gosh.
And that was, January of 2007. I got qualified for my first World Championships in 2009. And made the team in 2010 for Canada at home.
Wow. What a quick and exciting progression, but a lot for someone at a young age. What is it that you fell in love with cross-country skiing? Because you didn't start when you were really little, correct?
I did a little bit of, when I was 5 years old, I kind of cross-country skied with my dad. And when my younger brother was a little older too, we both kind of just in the backyard had fun. I was on my mom's old skis and just kind of making tracks everywhere. And we lived on a farm. So on, you know, Sundays, we would go for a longer ski, just making our own trails. And so it was like my dad up front, usually our two dogs in the middle, just ruining the tracks. And then myself and then my younger brother kind of in the middle.
Aww.
Or just behind trying to keep up. So those were like kind of those first memories of skiing. And I did that when I was, five or so. Kind of stepped away from the sport a bit. And then it was just in 2002 watching Salt Lake, and the biathlon came on, and we're like, my brother and I were both like, wow, this is really cool, this sport, this biathlon. And it was a couple of years later before we actually got an opportunity to try biathlon, and we're like, okay, let's do it. And I skied a little bit still, but my brother wanted to really get into it. He got into it. He grabbed the opportunity. I was a little hesitant because this was when I was 14 years old. So I'd lost my arm in a farm accident when I was 7. So I was still kind of new and still discovering all these different things that I could do with one arm. And holding a rifle in my mind really wasn't one of those things that I could do with one arm. And so I was kind of hesitant the first week. And then listening to my brother, like, oh my God, this is so cool. I love it. I can't wait until next practice next week. And listening to that all week. And then the coach for the second time, the second week, he's like, well, do you want to give it a try? I'm like, okay, I'll give it a try. And I kind of like, yeah, instantly fell in love with the shooting aspect of it. Now I had the fitness, tried to quickly pick up the skiing part. And I think that was a pretty natural fit, a fit that just kind of clicked. And then almost, yeah, as soon as I started with the international side, it was like, hey, this is, you have to do classic too. I'm like, oh, this is something different. So I was not very good at classic. It was more like running with skis on, and then poor running with skis on. That was my classic for the first few years. And it was actually Vancouver. It was after Vancouver. I kind of like, going into Vancouver, I had just made my first two podiums, one in biathlon and one in cross country, four weeks before.
Wow, the young
so
gun.
I was kind of like, yeah, a little naive though to the idea like, oh, I can at home, it's going to be magical. Maybe I can get another a medal. That was not the case. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of going there and seeing how the best do their thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the biggest lessons for me in Vancouver. I was flying home from Vancouver and like, yep, this is what I want to do. And yeah, hit the ground running right from that spring and had at that time, the most successful year right after that and just kind of built from there forward. But it was going to Vancouver and realizing that the top veterans and the best skiers in the world, they save themselves for games. Like that is when they're at their best. And it's a whole different level. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's really special to just, you have to feel that you have to be close enough to know that that's the difference. And I think luckily I was just in that perfect time where I was like, yeah, I'm getting close. And then it's all of a sudden you get hit by that realization of what the games are. And the guys are like, oh, these guys are a lot faster. Like now they are peaked. Yeah. I don't know what peaking is, but they are peaked. And also the other realization was, okay, if Canada wants to do well in the relay, I need to classic. And so the next 4 years for me was like a very, like not only just improving everything, but a very keen focus on classic because then we were thinking we were going to Sochi and the relay could be Chris Klebel as our sit skier, myself as a classic skier, and Brian McKeever as the skate anchor. And we're like, wow, that is on paper, that is already a team that is exciting. And I think just before Sochi, they changed how the relays were going to be formatted. And it's like, that was maybe a lost opportunity there. But that was kind of what kickstarted my love for classic. And then eventually it's like, okay, yeah, once you get a hang of classic, I feel like it's easier. It has these moments where it's just magical, where skate is sometimes just nice. There are magical moments in classic. And I think that Vancouver was what made me want to be not only a great Paralympian, but also a great classic skier. And that kind of kickstarted a lot of my career there.
I feel like you're not just explaining your story. You're like telling me a very specific piece of advice right now because you know how I feel about classic ski. So you're like speaking to me directly right now because as Mark knows, classic skiing, you know, starting cross country skiing only about 5.5 years ago now, I gravitated towards skate a lot more naturally. And classic has been this very trying journey of real frustrations. And as soon as you feel like, wow, I might have gotten something down, you get into a race and you're like, well, everyone else still does it a lot better than me. So you, I find this really interesting that you say, you know, you weren't classic skiing very well in Vancouver and then over these next 4 years. So how did that process go of learning? Because arguably now, and I think most athletes in the paracross country circuit would say this. I mean, Jay Gattakoff gave you a very good compliment the other day. He said, out of all of the categories of paracross country, including VI, who, you know, do have all their limbs and have two poles, that you have the best classic technique of anyone he sees on the circuit. So how do you go from this kid who's like, I'm not good at classic, to you now, you know, a few years later are the best without question?
I think the big one, it was just surrounding and working with really good classic skiers. I think right away when, you know, Robin approached me after Robin McKeever, who was the coach, my coach at the time, or took over the program after Vancouver, he's like, this is, yeah, we need you to classic. And he was there to help me realize that need and help me along that way. But it was also like, you know, we have great respect for, at the time, because I thought the best classic skier with one arm, for sure, is still Nita Yuroshiro. I don't know if I got that name right, but I think his dedication to classic technique, I still think he's one of the best classic skiers there. And it was like, okay, I want to, A, catch up. And eventually, after years of catching up, I finally think I made the transition to matching. And now I've kind of succeeded him in that, the technical ability of classic. But it was always that driving for many, many years. It was like, okay, that's how he is doing it. I want to catch him. And luckily, I was, you know, I actually had every few months, I had that connection with Nita of, okay, yeah, we get to race against each other. Am I getting closer? Yep. No, yes, no, yeah. Okay, I'm getting closer. I've been closer. Oh, I matched him today. And I think that was really important for my development as that classic skier, as I'm hunting it, is finding not only having Robin being able, as my coach, being like, okay, we know that this is our common goal. This is what we're trying to drive for. Giving me the great resources of, hey, Nita is one of the best out there. We had Ilkka Tormasto from Finland, another fantastic one-arm skier. As the Finns are, they're very good classic skiers to begin with. So I had these two guys that I could really relate with and chase down. And I think that really helped. And then you had Brian. I could work with Brian at home in my kind of daily training environment. And I think all those pieces kind of just always worked together to make sure that I was always pushing that. And eventually, yeah, I found that love for it, because eventually it was a lot of work. And eventually I felt that I started like, hey, I'm getting it. And then, and like you said, like there are days where it's like, nope, not working. And then other days, and I think it's also a part of what you're doing for the technique, getting the timing right, all those pieces, but also just your confidence in getting classic skis ready. Like if you can rely on the grip too, and learn how to set the grip and give yourself good grip on kind of not great ski conditions, your confidence, not only in your ability of your waxing, but also in your ability to classic ski, just becomes so much better. And I think that's one of the other pieces that I've seen, that confidence, just kind of the technical and the grip, those both together kind of just kept pushing each other a little higher. And I think that was really special. As well.
For anyone who's listening who isn't as familiar with cross-country skiing, spell it out for us in elementary terms. What is classic technique?
Classic is your more very traditional. It's you're kind of moving linearly in the tracks that are set in the snow. It's your very, like, if you think cross-country skiing, that's usually where you're going to think about. Sometimes it's akin to running. Sometimes on the hills, it literally is just running with skis on. But if it's done really well, there is this element of glide, and that's kind of that magical element of it, where you get that glide and that kick. And, it's kind of I loved it growing up in school, because I could apply the physics and the math that I was learning in high school to the actual skiing as well. And then kind of be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Never did. And then freestyle or skate technique is kind of a more modern take on it. It is kind of free technique means you can do whatever you want, but free technique is kind of also always coined with skating, which is kind of more like ice skating, but with skis and the cross-country skis and pole or poles or no poles.
Or no poles.
Depending on how you do it.
That's the beauty of para. You have often been coached by people who either don't have disabilities or, like Brian now, has a disability but is still skiing with two poles. And I personally find this to be a very interesting thing too, always feeling like I'm learning from people who are two-pole skiing. And that's why I have found a lot of benefit in spending time with you and some of your teammates who are so good at one-pole skiing. But how did you, in your own brain, as you were learning classic and really trying to master it, like process this person's doing with the two poles? Like, how can I change it? Or am I basically doing the same thing just with one pole? How do you split that up in your brain as you were trying to process how to classic ski?
For me to want to answer that, I think there's two sides to there. There is the able body technique or with two poles. That is still the pinnacle of, you know, there's been thousands of hours, thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars in whatever currency spent on making sure that the biomechanics of able body skiing is at its peak. So I think it only makes sense for us to use that as a resource and ski as closely as we can. The other side of it is having those that understand the subtle differences in it. And I think Robin, as my longest time coach, he was very good at like actually just throwing a pole off and skiing with me with one pole. And I think we learned from different athletes, not only on the team, but we working with the Japanese team. Robin did a camp with them. Brian and I were invited to do a camp with them. And not only thinking in a coaching role, but also as like a teammate or a friend. And when we coach them and working with different elements of it, like I learned a lot. Some of the technique stuff that I've learned, especially in double pole, was actually from a fellow six, but on the women's side. Mm. And she has her arm and tucks it. And then that what gave me, I was just kind of fooling around trying to ski like her in an intensity, like just trying to be a good teammate in an interval. And all of a sudden something clicked in there. And then Robin also saw that something clicked in how I was skiing. Hmm. And we took that and it's like, oh, okay, that's something we can take across and use to our advantage. And I think it's the other piece that I want to see, and it was, I think, reflects from Robin as well, is your competitors can also help you push you further ahead. And I think that's the diversity of the impairments that we have in para are really unique in that way. As I, right from almost from the very first year, I was skiing and racing 5.7s, which for us is athletes who ski without a pole or any poles. And my thinking as a 16, 17, 18 year old was like, I want to be able to ski as quickly as they do with no pole, and then I can add the pole in. And I think that was always for me a very strong mindset of, okay, I want to take myself down to that impairment, if you will, and be able to actually, if I was a 5.7 and not able, and I could not race, or I could race without a pole, I want to be the fastest. And then I want to be the most efficient. If I grab one pole, I want to be the most efficient with one pole. And I think that's how I always looked at technique, is I want to work on those elements. And I just don't want to be the fastest with one pole. That is the ultimate goal. But I think I can gain that by being smarter elsewhere. Mm. I need to use my legs more efficiently. And who uses their legs the most efficiently are 5.7s.
People without poles.
Or those that don't use poles. Mm-hmm. So I think... And that's kind of, I right from the very beginning, I'm really, and I have no clue where that came from. It was just, that's how I saw competitors. And I think that then later on translated into looking at other competitors and being like, okay, they have two poles. Where are they the strongest on the course? Mm-hmm. And learning where their strengths are and where they're weaker on. And then not only as a class, but also as individuals. Okay, this person is a four, but they really don't like technical tight turns because of their impairment. So I can be like, okay, this is something I can use and be like, okay, if there's a technical section, I can make my move there. Or, oh, wait a minute. No, I'm going to struggle here. I need to be smart because they're actually quite effective here. And I think that gave me also later on in my career, a more mature way of looking at every impairment, every athlete has a different influence for my thinking there. And then it also gives me a different perspective of how I can strengthen pieces that I'm not as good at or my weaknesses. And I think those two pieces together, not only for the racing of benefit, but also for my personal improvement, I think that was really neat to see that.
For those who do know classic skiing and understand what we're talking about, how would you describe what you do, especially if they come at it from non-para? They have two poles. Let's say it's a steep uphill. They start to slip, but they can't make their wax pocket, but they have the poles to fall on. You don't have a pole and you barely have an arm on that side. Your arm is quite short compared to some competitors. What do you do when you start to slip?
I think it's kind of just getting used to that. Yes, I'm probably going to slip two or three steps earlier than most. And so to me, a lot of the technical pieces are very similar for myself to able body. Mm-hmm. I can ski, I can diagonal ski like everybody else. I can double pull. Okay, there's maybe a little asterisk on double pull. But I can kick double pull like everyone else. Technically, it's the tactical now that I have to change. So I'm never going to go into a race and be like, yeah, I'm going to double pull this race.
No,
that's the tactic that's just never going to work for me with one arm. But the tactical piece would be like, okay, I'm coming into this hill. I know I can't make it all the way up. So be proactive and be like, okay, go as far as I can, but know
you're
that,
gonna jump out.
And then think one step before that, I'm going to jump out and go into a run or a herringbone, or if it's really long and steep and the grip is really bad, a waddle.
A waddle.
But yeah.
Yeah, fair.
Depending on my shape on that day. But yeah, so I think it's the difference between able body and para in cross country, whether that's skate or classic. I think it's more of a tactical decision and changes more than the technical changes.
No, definitely. Well, we could nerd out on technique all day, and I'm looking forward to many more years of nerding out on technique with you. But I am curious, you know, you have been doing this for a long time. Like, you are definitely one of the most tenured. I mean, you've been on the World Cup circuit now since 2007.
20 seasons
on the World Cup. So you have seen it, you know, in many different stages. And you've seen also the transformation that has occurred with us going under FIS as compared to being governed by the IPC before. What do you think the biggest differences are now with our World Cup circuits? And how could you break down how our circuits work, especially for those who might only kind of understand the non-para side of cross-country skiing?
That's my career, that 20 years. I think the changes have been huge. And sometimes there is a reluctance to change, for sure. But there's also been some like, hey, let's just try something. And I think that's been really neat to see it. I think the biggest one that I've seen is the depth in the fields. Mm-hmm. Like, we do have more athletes. Before, there were times where it's just like, yep, there's one athlete. As long as they show up to the start line, they're going to win. And that was in different categories. And there are strong athletes that have a high possibility of that now. But there's also, you know, a dozen athletes that could actually threaten a podium. And I think that's really neat. I also saw like the growth of the categories to 2014 just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then all of a sudden there was this shift. And I talked to counterparts on the Alpine side and even snowboard who had their first games in 2014.
Yeah.
All of the winter sports seemed to just tail off a little bit. So for some reason, our numbers really weren't that high going into Pyeongchang. They've kind of been stable until Beijing. But I think right now there's actually this reinsurgence of bigger fields. I think we saw earlier this year in Germany, some of the biggest fields I've seen
definitely, maybe
ever, and definitely in the last long time. Maybe even a decade.
What do you think is contributing to that growth in some of these fields?
I think there is just teams are getting bigger, and I think that's neat. I think we're seeing different nations. I'm not sure if this is quite yet the FIS or FIS effect where they're encouraging other NSOs to start to kind of not only, I think the development is always there. I don't think we've really seen the encourage of new nations yet.
Yep.
We've seen a couple of people, you know, some that have been, you know, not always there, but are just kind of circling. I don't think we've seen quite the new nations yet, which I expect to see probably after this quad, like after Cortina. I think the first 2 years, we'll see how things transition. But I believe we will see some new nations that have not really ever participated in para sport or para cross country in particular, start to get involved. And that's also going to drive the development of the smaller teams and the depth that we're going to get from our big nations. We're also, some of the bigger nations are around now. They're putting more commitment to racing at more World Cups. They're trying to be more on a regular presence on the World Cups. And I think that's helping as well.
I agree that I think we're going to see the biggest fields, like in some of these categories, bigger than we even had in Beijing. I mean, I remember the women's standing field in Beijing was, I think on a big day, was like 18 or so athletes. And in our Finstrau World Cup the other day, like there was a race with over 20. And I think that's very exciting, and that the growth will hopefully just, again, continue to make the sport more and more elite and serious as well. So in your 20 World Cup seasons, you've obviously had a ton of success with Paralympic medals, World Championship medals, tons of World Cup podiums. Do you ever get tired of winning? Or does it feel just as good every time?
It feels very good every time. I think to me, it's never been a lot about the results. It's about the performances. I think that was very, again, just surrounded by very good champions and very good role models for me, whether that was Robin, Brian, Colette Burgoyne. These were some of the best athletes. I think a hard work ethic from Chris Klebel. Like this is a guy who would just sit behind a spinner for 4 hours underneath a tent in the pouring rain. And it's like, yeah, that's getting the work done. And I think just learning from these fantastic athletes created just this drive for performance. I'm curious about what can I achieve. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really exciting. I think more so in the last four years, it's been, I've set the bar, especially on the biathlon side. I've set a bar that is quite high, but I also believe everyone sees it and are going to catch up. So now my curiosity, especially this last year, was what's the bar that I can set? Where's the new path? What trails can I create, or a new level? And I think that's really exciting for me, is where can I love detail. Where are the details that I can influence or impact that are going to make me even better? Is it the training? Is it how much intensity am I doing? Am I doing the right intensities at the right time? Can I shave a little bit off in the range? Nutrition, all these elements, I think there's still, for me, gaps that I can fill, or, you know, areas to explore. And can I make these areas for myself better? And then, you know, hopefully encourage the rest of the field to catch up as well, as long as I can stay
on the curve. Well, what is that bar you're trying to set in Milan?
For me, Milan is about being at my best every time I come to the start line. Whether that's physically, mentally, I want to be as prepared as I can be for each of those races. And that there's so many things that influence that. But in the preparation, making sure that I have everything ready, I get to the start line and I perform. And kind of, I've always seen it as it's everything you do, every execution of your race plan is just another better card. And at the end of when you cross the finish line, at the end of the race, you kind of have your hand of cards, you put them down and you see if someone can beat them. And, you know, if you execute this one corner right all three times in a three lap race, then yeah, you've got an ace or you've got a king. And that's going to be really hard to beat. And so to me, it's not necessarily always been about the results. It's been about the performance. It's about doing what I can control well and not making mistakes or limiting those mistakes. So yes, if you miss a corner or you miss a pole plant, drop the pole because you grabbed a feed. It's happened. It's about learning from those and making sure they don't happen again. And I think that was also reflective in how I approach some of the biathlon races. Like, to me, one miss, I can deal with one miss, but if I make two mistakes in a row and miss a second time, that really hurts me, like right there. And there's going to be some serious talk, self-talk after that. That should probably not be repeated.
Yeah, I was going to say, you are probably pretty hard on yourself, aren't you?
I expect a level of performance and sometimes, you know, that doesn't result in, you know, wins or podiums or anything like that. But I need to go out there and make sure that I've done everything that I can in order to get the best out of whatever that day might be. It might be a first. You know, I've had wins that were really hard and, you know, just pulled it off by fractions of seconds. And I've also had wins that it's like, yeah, they were really easy. But the opposite has been really true. Like, I've had really hard or really easy days and you're just like, yeah, that was an awesome day and I'm going to be third or fourth or even worse. I think a great example, World Championships last year. I think I had a great classic 20K. Mm-hmm. Classic 20K? And
it was skate 20K. Yeah. In Toblach.
In Toblach. And there were at least four guys that I'm like, there was no way I was going to beat them today, no matter what. And yeah, I finished sixth, but I'm like, that was a really good race for me. But sometimes a condition, sometimes a course just suits an impairment. And I think that's really unique about para as well. It's sometimes it's just impairment will make the difference. Mm-hmm. It's no matter how hard you can do it. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing for the sport. It's just
it's a reality.
For the athletes in it. They have to, yeah, it's a reality and you have to accept that. Like, because the very next day or the very next course could be very tailored to you.
And for anyone who doesn't understand, when they're coming into para cross country and para alpine, it's actually quite similar in the way the classifications are done. Is there's three overarching categories, and within those classifications, there's sub-classifications. So Mark's impairment, it gets him a certain percent of factor off his time, someone without poles, someone with a leg impairment. So there's this variety of different classifications, and it is a percent of the time. So it does greatly impact, you know, what the results are at the end of the day. And these are predetermined percent. So it doesn't change due to the snow conditions, the temperatures, the course structure, the course profile, and certain courses. Like Mark said, it's just the reality of the sport. Like, some days it plays to your favor in your class, and other days it plays very much into someone else's favor. And that's just what the reality of parasport is for these factor systems. So can you briefly tell us what is your class? So when someone sees it watching the Paralympic Games, and tell us your factor percents.
I compete as an LW6. That means I have an impairment above the elbow on my left side. So I'm just an amputation just above the left. In freestyle or skate, I would be 95%. And in classic, I am 90%.
Okay, perfect. And what can people expect to watch you in come these very soon games in Milano Cortina? So there's three cross-country races.
Most days.
Yeah, most days. There's three cross-countries, there's three biathlon, and there's one cross-country team relay. So what can people watch Mark Arends in?
So I think my six out of the seven races are my targeted goals. I think my focus will be on the three biathlon races, absolutely. Going to use that classic prowess and try to see if I can be competitive, if I can get this body moving up a hill for the classic sprint. The classic 10K, I'm very much looking forward to. And in most cases, I want to be ready for whatever my team needs in the relay. So those are the six races that I will focus on. For the games, and that's where I will target my energy and make decisions based on those races.
No 20-kilometer skate race last day?
Not at this
point.
Come
on, Mark, just send it.
You never know. There might be a moment. You know, a flip of the coin Saturday night. Tails yes, heads no.
I feel like that's the type of race that it's last day, longest race. Like, people are going to be tired. And this unlike our Olympic counterparts, is the end of the season. There is no more World Cups after this. This is the end. So most people will not be competing again unless maybe they're going home to their respective nations and doing some national competitions. But this is the big ending. And so I feel like it at first, I think a lot of people were upset that it was the last race of the games, the longest one. But honestly, now I kind of feel like people are that I've talked to are in a kind of, well, let's just send it, see what gas is left in the tank. Like, you know, expectations might be lower. And no, you're not maybe going to have your most stellar race, but there is something to be said, I think, for last race of the season energy and being able to pull something out that you might not have known is there because you maybe have lowered your expectations or you're like, the season's over after this, like just lay it all out there. So I think you should do it, but we'll see how the rest of your games comes first.
The focus is on the first
yes,
six.
Yes. Okay. Fair. Well, Mark, you know what, if you could sum up your career, I know I gave you such a good intro to start, but how would you really sum it up for a viewer who's wanting to learn more about paracross country? You know, I'm sure when you Google paracross country, you're probably one of the first photos or articles that pops up because of your great success. How do you sum up this highly successful career?
That's a really tough question. I don't know. I don't think I've reflected on that yet.
Yes, because it's not over. It's not over, but up to this point.
Nope, not even close. And I think that's really exciting, is to see that I still want more from it. I think overall the value that I want to share with my career and want to express through my career is that ability. I want to share my experiences with others. I want to, like, I truly believe, whether it's as an athlete, as a coach, or any other role in sport, I want the next generation to be better. I want to set a bar that they're like, wow, that seems impossible, but is also, I want to help them share my experiences and teach them that it's step by step, right? If you would have asked me in 2008, how, you know, you're going to do are you going to compete well in Classic? I'd be like, nope. and now I'm probably one of, if I do a Classic race, a top contender in it. And I think that's really, the uniqueness of the career that I've had. I've had these years where I've been ups and downs. And I think that's really what I'm really proud of, is just that consistency over this long period of time of just constant improvement, growth. It's not always linear and upwards. It's sometimes, okay, yeah, one thing is my Classic is really well good, but my skate is not that great. And then I swapped those two. I didn't race Classic for a year. With an injury on my heels, and just focus on skate, and all of a sudden skate was really good. But I was also eager to get back to Classic. And then the next year, I think the very first Classic race I did, I won.
There you go.
It's like, oh, yeah, okay, it's back.
Still got it.
And the next race I was third, but, I think that's the ups and downs of a career, and it's never going to be a simple, beautiful upward trajectory. And I think that's what's important to learn and understand for all athletes and anyone watching. There are ups and downs. We're not robots out there performing perfectly every time. That's what we are trying to achieve within that moment, but it's not going to happen. And I think that's the adapting of the situations, the conditions. You know, yeah, maybe as we talked about it, there are courses that don't suit you or I. And to me, that's also an opportunity to be curious. Like, what can I do to close that gap or even succeed that gap? And I think that's always been, it's still looking for those things. Okay, maybe I don't accelerate as quickly, but can I be smarter and can I maintain my speed on sprint courses better than most? And just different pieces like that, those are the curiosities now that really excite me.
Your attention to detail is second to none, Mark. And, you know, we are very excited from FIS to watch you compete in Milan. Thank you for everything you've done for the sport, for pushing the sport, for advocating for the sport, for making the sport better. And 5 Paralympics, I'm sure more to come in whatever role it is someday. I think, you know, if you do become a coach, you're going to be an excellent coach. And hopefully, maybe I'll be calling you up to be my coach soon. But we,
there's always a possibility.
Always a possibility. We love cross-nation friendships. And we are wishing you the best of luck in your final preparations. We will see you in Milano Cortina. And we appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
Mark Arends, the best athlete you've never heard of.